gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I just realized why Chris Matthews leans forward in his chair like this. All the, hey, American Simpsons, what do you got about? Because he's got one of these chairs like I have.
Yeah,
the
he's
back
broken chairs.
Forces you to lean forward.
Yeah. How weird is that? Chris Matthews is on the show today. Huh. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Unless,
wow,
of course we're,
what are the odds?
Unless, of course, we're cleared by riot police. It'll be the Stephanie Miller Show all 3 hours.
Oh.
All right.
So what now?
I don't know. I've got a bunch of things twirling around in my head. I can't remember.
Bloomberg says that there are, that, okay.
Huh? Oh.
Yeah.
We're doing three bits all together.
Yes.
We're doing clearing the Occupy movement. I'm doing a Herman Cain bit.
Too much stuff swirling around in my head. I can't think.
In case you're just waking up, riot police cleared Zuccotti Park overnight.
Jerry Sandusky just got creepier.
Yeah.
And Herman Cain is a complete dunce. On foreign policy.
I don't think President Obama should have invaded Becky Uzistan.
Oh, all right,
my
we'll get to
okay.
We'll
that was
that.
That was a minute two. That was longer than Rick Perry's brain.
That was
fart.
Worse. It was worse.
Wow.
It was worse. We'll get to it. All right, kids. Stephanie. What? By the way, there's not often I'm so impressed with myself. Well, Stephanie Miller is impressed with
Stephanie Miller.
Yes. Because today, not only do we have Chris Matthews, Katrina Vandenhoevel, Charlie Pierce, and CNN's Christine Romans all on the big show today.
Wow, it's an awesome show today.
Yeah. And we're just based on the last few, and the cluster that was the first opening minute.
Yeah.
We were all doing three different bits. Enjoy. Try to keep up. All right.
We're going to call in the professionals in hours two and three.
We're just the warm-up act this hour. All right.
How out on the day that Chris Matthews is showing up? We all have Chris Matthews chairs.
Yeah.
The forces lean forward on the desk so it can shout right into the camera.
Well, yeah, there's a new afternoon show here on our flagship station, and so they
lean forward.
Apparently, they like to lean forward.
Yeah, and I'm used to John Fugel saying doing the Chris Matthews bit in Sexy Liberal Show, so I'm just like, I'm talking to the actual guy. Okay, yeah, I was telling Lisa that I overslept. I didn't get through all my show prep, and she's like, on Chris Matthews, she's like, he won't let you get a word in edgewise anyway. That's okay.
Just ask him about Jack Kennedy.
Tell me,
and then
tell me about that. Just sit back.
Yeah. So tell me about Jack Kennedy.
All right. SexyLiberal.com, the website, SexyLiberal on Facebook. Wow, thanks for all the great reviews on Austin this past Saturday. My friend Kay from Dallas came down.
Oh.
And wrote the sweetest thing. She's not even, I don't even think she's liberal. She just said the passion, energy, intelligence on the stage and in the audience were absolutely amazing to witness. The Austin Post gave us an amazing review.
Nice.
Thank you, Austin Post. And Mama's, it's the big hometown show if I make it to the end of the week. Here we go.
There's no place like home. There's no place like
Buffalo, your native daughter, Stephanie Miller, is coming home to upstate New York. And she's bringing her sexy liberal friends.
Homeward bound, I wish I was.
So tell me, Mama, why make Buffalo's biggest cookie?
On November 19th at Shea's Performing Arts Center, the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Show is coming home. And she's bringing her sexy siblings, John Fugelsang and Hal Sparks. Whether you're coming from North Tonawanda, Cheektowaga, or anywhere else, just jump on the transit and come see Mama. That's the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Show at Shea's Performing Arts Center on November 19th in Buffalo, New York. You can take the gal out of Buffalo, but you can't take Buffalo out of the gal.
Ow. Ow. Ow.
Ow. That hurts.
Ow. I see someone named Susan posted on Facebook, pants wedding. Was there, so I wet my pants.
Wow.
That's our first incontinence, I believe. Thank you, Susan. All right. This Saturday show is going to have to be a Herman Cain and Palooza, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard to. You'd think the most damaging thing was his sexual harassment accuser's ex-boyfriend backing her up on her story, but it wasn't.
I think Ingrid must have slipped him a roofie or something.
God.
His handlers say that he was working on 4 hours of
well,
sleep.
Then they
They've
shouldn't
used
have put
that
him out
excuse
there.
Before. he's been on TV too much. Unfortunately, when you're president, you don't ever have to be on television, so there'd be none of that pressure.
I know, there's no insomnia ever when you're president.
No, not at all.
I was just discussing insomnia with Chris. This is why this tour is killing me. I have insomnia already. I'm in morning radio, and now I'm traveling and staying up till midnight.
Whatever.
That's my whole things twirling around. You know, flapping wires. I'm like full-time Herman Cain. I'm like, what? Yeah. I don't know.
Things twirling around.
But I'm not running for
there.
President.
Too many things twirling around in my head.
Oh, my God. That was, that really was a horror show. It's a minute and 4 seconds of horror show. See, we're in radio, so we know exact time.
Exactly.
Rick Perry, 52 seconds.
50, yes.
Of horror show.
Yeah.
Herman Cain, this was really, because you could, it just exposed everything, didn't it, Jim? It's like, even Tucker Carlson said, why are we pretending this guy's qualified to be president? He clearly knows nothing, and he was trying to remember, like, what was my talking point on this, and he had to ask the interviewer for help. Yeah. He didn't even know what Obama's policy was in Libya. It's like, oh, he was...
I'm just trying to catapult propaganda.
This is
he
just
he was for it, yeah. right?
This is just a book tour that has gotten way out of hand.
Wow,
yeah.
He just so then he was, and the main problem is yes, he'd been on record criticizing Obama's policy in Libya but it turned out to be absolutely correct. He was like, I don't remember what my talking point was about how to criticize the press. He
I
was for it. Well, I must
I
be against it, so
say.
I don't. If he's for it, then I must be against. But how did that work? If what he did, I don't. Ow.
Am I for my own againstness?
Oh, boy. This is at a meeting with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
Yeah.
Sadly for him, caught on camera.
Wow.
So you agreed with President Obama on Libya or not?
Okay, Libya.
Oh, jeez. There's a good start.
President Obama.
Yes, he's the president.
Supported the uprising, correct? President Obama called for the removal of Gaddafi. Just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing before I say, yes, I agreed. I didn't agree. I do not agree with the way he handled it for the following reason.
Uh-huh.
That's a different one.
No.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Come on. That's 2 hours.
I got to go back. See.
Oh.
Wow.
Got all this stuff twirling around in my head. specifically, what are you asking me? Did I agree or not disagree?
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. God.
So what should
I say?
Is
it time for Rick Perry to execute his campaign? Seriously.
what do you want me to say?
Almost made me feel bad for him.
Can I go take a nap and come back in about 10 hours?
Yeah. See, and I really do have sympathy because of sleep deprivation. You know, most mornings I'm like,
I know.
You can tell the story. Here's a behind-the-scenes fun fact about the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh?
What did I do just yesterday that made your life a living hell?
Okay, I have to...
Me and technology, not
right.
so much.
I have to use GoToMyPC to print out all of your stories.
Yes, because we go live, but we actually use our sponsors and love them.
Exactly.
So Chris uses GoToMyPC to print my stories on my computer from his house.
And
it takes
me about 20 minutes to do the whole thing.
Yes.
And
I'm a technophobe, but you think that would be technology proof. I don't even have to do anything.
Right. And about 2 hours later, I get a call from her saying,
Drunk dial.
Yeah. Chris?
Chris?
I reuse all of my paper, and I put all
I'm
the
thrifty.
Paper in upside down, so I can't read what you printed out. I need you to print it out again.
And he was
the
on his way out.
Upside down? It doesn't print on both sides? What?
Right.
I put it in the wrong way. I guess you're supposed to put it in face up.
Right, and so
it
prints
down.
It on the previously printed
paper.
Yeah.
Okay, because you're recycling.
The main thing most people are taking from this is, God, what a cheap bitch.
Yeah.
Really?
Right.
You reuse paper? I do. So. And anyway, Chris was about heading out to have some sort of life in the tiny window that
gym.
I give him to have an actual life outside of this show.
Wait a minute, Chris goes to the gym? Wow. That's a shock.
That's the biggest shocking thing from this. Yeah. Check it out, you stream. Really?
What? Hey.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay. Just make sure you have the paper in
Apologize.
Today.
Yeah,
please.
We thought it made the show idiot-proof. Go to my PC, but as it turns out...
Computer says no.
I found a way.
There you go.
Or maybe you should just shred all your old...
Well, I mean, I do see the point of reusing old paper, because we do use a lot of paper.
We go
on
through
this
a lot
show.
Of paper, and we're environmentalists.
Yeah.
We're a green show.
But you got to turn it the right way.
Face up.
Yes.
I finally learned that. Mm-hmm. Because I pass out face down so many times, I just automatically... I go to face down.
You got too much toil around in your head.
That's right. That's exactly it. And that's my whole point. Is see, I'm coming back to the fact, sleep deprived as I am, that I have sympathy
right.
for Herman Cain because that's the way my brain operates. Now I'm on this tour and in morning radio.
I got too many crazy bitches swirling around in my head.
Exactly. There's too many lying bitches swirling around in there. There's no room for foreign policy. Oh boy. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, at some point, okay, this has ceased to be kind of charming and funny. He has previously said he didn't feel the need to master every detail of foreign policy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How about a detail?
Yeah, just one.
Yeah,
we'll take one.
Well, this is what he was talking about. He was Becky Stan. I'm ready for the gotcha questions.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's a gotcha question.
Do you agree with
the president on Libya or not? Like, huh?
Mr. President, there's a nuclear strike coming in from Iran. What do we do?
Ubiquitous A in the chat room says we'll just take the basics of foreign policy.
Just anything.
Yeah.
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 Foreign countries are countries which are not America.
Mm-hmm. He said, I'm ready for the gotcha questions, and they're already starting to come. And when they ask me who the president was, Becky Stan, I'm going to say, I don't know. Do you know? Well, I'm guessing most of his interviewers.
Wow. Computer says, yeah.
Yes,
they do know.
Yes, they do know. That's why they asked. I love that.
Uzbekistan is a former Soviet socialist republic. It's one of the places where loose nukes are known
yes.
to be.
Might need
it's
their
kind of important to know
and
who's in charge there.
They have oil.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's that.
Yes.
So, you, as a Republican, you should know that.
Where they're generally situated may be helpful in the...
So you might in case you have to bomb someplace, you might want to bomb the right place.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I think that might be the end of the...
Wow.
Okay. All right.
I slept in my roofie, frankly. Mission accomplished, frankly.
Newt Gingrich in one poll is in the lead.
22%.
I love this field. I do. I love this race. 17 minutes after the hour, we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the political party line now. 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller. That should be your theme song.
There's no right. Here we go. Yeah. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 23 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere to join the party. Oh, gosh, more Herman Cain respect for the chicks. Did you see this? they asked what flavor ice cream. What is it with the ice cream question?
I don't
with Herman
know.
Cain? What best describes Michelle Bachmann? And he said, I'm not going to say it. Tutti Frutti. Oh. He said Mitt Romney plain vanilla, Rick Perry is Rocky Road. He also, by the way, claims to be a manly man who won't be seen eating a sissy pizza.
Right, with vegetables on it.
So that would be kind of a, you know.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. He says the more toppings a man has on his pizza, I believe, the more manly he is. Because the more manly man is not afraid of abundance.
Has he seen the quality of toppings that you get on Godfather's pizza? Their sausage looks like little rabbit pellets. Seriously.
Toppings? He said, a manly man don't want it piled high with vegetables. He would call that a sissy pizza. I love the sausage, the mushrooms. I love it. Love it. Love it. He likes a big Denny Hester pizza.
Mushrooms are vegetables, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes, by the way. That's another gotcha question.
Hang on. I assumed it was a kind of meat.
What are you asking now?
I got too many
vegetables, toppings twirling around in my head.
Too many mushrooms twirling around in my head. Well, that explains it.
What kind of mushrooms did you have in your pizza, Herman?
He said he doesn't eat pizza that often because it's got to be as good as Godfather's or I won't eat it.
I just think I'm going to burst.
Godfather's isn't even good at 3 a.m. when you're drunk.
Yeah, I mean, normally there's that, you know.
Yeah.
Thing about pizza, even when it's like sex, even when it's bad, it's still pretty good.
Right.
But not Godfather's.
No.
No.
No, that's... All right. Gloria Cain.
Oh.
Greta called Gloria.
Yes.
And she was on the box. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, called her.
Uh-huh. Yeah, uh-huh. I think she had her number.
And I guess because... he's never sexually harassed a woman in front of her. It couldn't possibly be true.
To hear such graphic
allegations and know that that would have been something that was totally disrespectful of her as a woman. And I know that's not the person he is. He totally respects women.
Of course.
And I'm thinking he would have to have a split personality.
Well, yeah.
To do the things that she said.
I guess that's breaking news to Gloria that most men don't do it in front of their wives.
Stand by your man.
Yes, indeed. Gloria Kane last night.
No, because his conscience would bother him.
Mm-hmm.
His conscience would bother him, and he couldn't look me straight in the eye.
Oh, no. No. Most men have gotten really good at it when they've done it that much.
If you're a really good liar, you specialize in that kind of thing.
He probably just turns to her with that same creepy smile.
Yeah.
Why, Gloria.
Gloria, how could you think such a thing of me?
Yeah. Creepy smoky guy behind him. Smoke. Smoke.
Yeah, he's totally faithful. Yeah, trust me.
She probably can't see his eyes because there's too much cigarette smoke from Mark Block. When I tried to look in his eyes, he seemed to be telling the truth. All right.
Oh, God. But my eyes were watering at the time from all the cigarette smoke.
I couldn't. It was like Apocalypse Now. He seemed like he was telling the truth.
I love the smell of pizza in the morning. Smell like victory.
Yes, it does. All right. Meanwhile, Dr. Victor Zuckerman is the ex-boyfriend of Sharon Bialik, the Chicago woman who accused Herman Cain of sexually inappropriate behavior, backed up her story.
When she returned, she was upset. She said that something had happened and that Mr. Cain had touched her in an inappropriate manner.
Yeah, she said she handled it. She didn't want to talk about it any further. I honored her request. He said that he was the one that suggested she contact Allred, who he called a powerful advocate for women's rights.
Wow.
He said, like many women in the workplace, she quietly endured what she felt was a sexual assault. He said Kane's now running for the most powerful position in the world. The public has a right to know this information. So part of the whole, Democrat machine smear, liberal, blah, blah. She is a Tea Party Republican, and he is a registered Republican.
I am a pediatrician.
Yes.
I am also a registered Republican. No party or candidate from any organization has contacted me. The public has a right to know this information to help them make an informed decision.
He talks like a pediatrician.
Now I want you to take off your shoes.
The public has a right to know.
Yes.
Show me where the boo-boo is.
All day. And Gloria Allred.
It's more like she said, she said, she said, she said, and he said.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right. Gloria with the tip in. Yeah. All right. All right. 29 minutes after the hour, we continue with Right Wing World next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
If I'd known there was someone as beautiful as you out there, I would have come out so much sooner.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. A showpalooza today. I'm sorry, I've got so many guests twirling around in my head, I couldn't keep them all straight. Christine Roman's coming up at the top of the hour. Charlie Pierce, and then Chris Matthews and Katrina Vandenhoevel all on the big show today.
Wow.
Check me out. I'm so impressed with myself. Tracy in Illinois, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Trace.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
Looking forward to seeing you in Chicago in March.
Oh, dear God, they're flying out the window. March 3rd in Chicago, mm-hmm. Everybody, sexyliberal.com. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. When I first heard the Herman Cain and pizza analogy, the first thing I thought of was his pizza topping are women.
Yeah.
It just was... just wanted to throw that out at you because it was kind of disgusting and...
Yeah.
You know, of course, here I am thinking it, so maybe I'm disgusting.
No, there you are, Tracy, you nasty little tart, you. All right, thank you. That was just one of...
I'm introducing my new tart-flavored pizza.
And that was the least embarrassing thing you said in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
The old manly. Yeah, it's not manly unless you get a clogged artery over your pizza.
Right. Sure.
You don't want those fruity. Was that also like a borderline gay smear? I think so.
Sissy pizza.
Yeah,
yeah.
Little, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good.
He's all vegetarian.
He's offended everyone at this point. Time to go now, Herman. Bye-bye. All right, let's dive into the right-wing world, see what's doing, shall we? Oh, Dana Perino, it's the little lying sack of cute.
Yep.
There she is.
President Obama, I don't know if they really want any success. They need to run against a do-nothing Congress. They don't want to have the signing ceremonies, like with the free trade agreements that they've worked to get done. It's a bipartisan accomplishment, no signing ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
What got the Oval Office signing ceremony last week? This thing about swag and T-shirts and pens.
Mm. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the only thing the president has accomplished. Yeah. Okay.
Signing statements. He's got not too many parties on camera for signing stuff.
Oh, the president is deliberately sabotaging the economy so he can run against a do-nothing Congress. See how clever he is?
Uh-huh. Democrats aren't that clever.
Forcing the Republicans to do nothing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Democrats just want to get things done. They're not clever like that, Dana.
They're not devious.
Yeah, don't view Democrats through a Republican lens, Dana.
Yeah. All right. Jonathan Honig.
I wish you were more devious, actually.
Yeah.
We could use some of that. Jonathan Honig on Fox Business.
The healthcare industry, which Alan mentioned, is a mess, is anything but free, Judge. For decades, it's been dominated by programs like Medicare, Medicaid, S-CHIP, and all this proposal does, all Obamacare does, is essentially put the coffin in the private healthcare industry in this country. It establishes healthcare as a right, which makes everyone a slave and ruins it for all.
Did you mean put the nail in the coffin?
What
put
did
the
say?
Coffin in the health care? What?
I don't know.
What?
Putting
what?
The coffin in the...
Because Medicare
rucksack.
Is so bad, well, and it makes you a slave, and so we should just...
He was saying that the Affordable Care Act will make everyone a slave.
Like Medicare does, which is so wildly unpopular.
Which is why Michelle Bachmann is so fond of it, despite the fact that she's against Great Society. What?
Yes, because we should be more like China, who's what?
Yes, more less socialist, communist China.
Wow. You know, it's hard to keep up with the dopiness on the Republican field.
Wow.
I was transfixed with the Herman Cain video. Yeah, exactly. I've said that how many times? It's a race to the bottom of dumb on the Republican side. Yeah, let me get to this dumbness. Hang on. All right. Yeah, I was transfixed with the Herman Cain video. But this, Jim, you talked about this yesterday. Gawker writes about it. Michelle Bachmann thinks America blew it by extending a safety net to millions of Americans under President Johnson's Great Society. Her solution? Model the economy after communist China.
What?
So it would be less socialist.
Huh? The Great Society has not worked. She said it's put us into the modern welfare state.
It worked spectacularly well.
If you look at China,
it's one of the reasons we have a middle class, or used to.
If you look at China, they don't have... Wait a minute. The president's bad because he's a socialist, but we should be more like China, who is communist?
Communist?
Yes.
What? You
don't. You are I don't. An idiot.
Okay, if you look at China, they don't have food stamps. If you look at China, they're in a very different situation. They save for their own retirement security. They don't have the modern welfare state, and China's growing.
They have communism.
China. What I would do is look at the programs that LBJ gave us with the Great Society, and they'd be gone.
China has these huge ghost towns.
Yes.
By the way,
and they have entire cities that are not hooked up to sewer systems.
Right. By the way, Gawker pointing out, aside from the basic absurdity of crediting a country that's still officially communist with avoiding the pitfalls of the welfare state, it's worth noting that Bachmann's broad condemnation of LBJ's legislative record is in open conflict with her own political positions.
Right.
Check her website. She has repeatedly positioned herself as a staunch defender of Medicare, the centerpiece of the Great Society programs, and has slammed President Obama for using funds from Medicare Advantage to help finance Affordable Care Act. Her critique of saving for retirement security also runs up against her stated support for Social Security, which is on her website.
I don't even know my own positions.
Does she know what enormous poverty China has?
Yeah. And oppression.
Yes.
We need to get some of that communism here to fight our Great Society welfare state, and also in addition to...
Oh, my God, she's so dumb.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Dumb and crazy. I thought you had to be smart to be crazy, but apparently not.
No, she's proving it every day. All right, Rush Limbaugh and Herman Cain.
How pathetic! How pathetic is it that you got to go back to an old boyfriend to back up your assertion? If you had to go build an old boyfriend to back up your assertion that you've been sexually harassed.
Mm, that's exactly what
14-year-old boyfriend. Oh, 14 years ago boyfriend.
Yeah.
They can't bring Herman Cain's poll numbers down. They cannot affect their fundraising.
Yes,
fundraising. In fact, it's the opposite. Poll numbers go up, fundraising numbers go up.
No, no.
So now here we have to go out and find a 14-year-old former, 14-year-old boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. First of all, Herman Cain's numbers approval.
There's not a statute of limitations on the truth, by the way.
Yeah. And by the way, to me, it had more credence that it's a former boyfriend.
Yes,
not
exactly.
A current boyfriend. It's, you know, he said they're still friends.
Well, that's why he feels the need to shout about it at the top of his lungs.
By the way, that's
his
exactly.
His voice got really high.
It did.
That's what they do in criminal or civil cases.
Yes.
You go back and get corroborating witnesses.
I watch Law and Order. I know what goes on.
That's exactly how they prove it. They go, did they tell anyone at the time, or are they making this up now? Whether it's a...
Right.
Yeah. Oh, dear God. Okay. Cal Thomas on Fox News.
I'm sure it should be fair and balanced. This is amazing, although it really shouldn't be. I mean, imagine Steve Capus, the president of NBC News, hiring the son or daughter of a former Republican president. Today, in so much of so-called broadcast journalism, the celebrity factor is all that matters. You don't have to go out and cover overnight shifts, the emergency room at hospitals, boring school board meetings, mayor's races. You can just go right to the top and get yourself a 6- or 7-figure salary.
Yes, imagine that, Chris. If they'd done something as outrageous as hire Meghan McCain or Jenna Bush. Imagine if that had happened.
Oh, wait, it did.
What the left would be, oops.
And we welcome Meghan McCain.
I'm completely incorrect, and I have just shot my own argument in the foot. I just shot myself and my talking point.
And he was calling from a tropical bar, apparently. Jamaica, man.
I have another
idea. The umbrella fell out of my drink.
Another thing.
Wow. You know, anything Clinton just makes Rush Limbaugh go insane, and I heard him.
Yeah.
Chelsea Clinton, my friend, is part of the whole plan. She will be president one day when Hillary decides to stop. The West, this is how they're starting with a liberal media.
I think she'll be more serious than Jenna Bush was. I mean, Jenna Bush was serviceable, but she wasn't anything to write home about.
Serviceable?
She was she was good talking about tropical drinks.
Yeah.
That was her whole beat. Her whole beat was...
That's why he was had Jenna there, Jenna Bush there.
Yes, Will in Seattle. Hi, Will.
Bar.
Hello.
Hello.
Herman Cain, when he was confused on that interview and asked about Libya, I think he thought the guy said labia and thought it was a sex question.
Oh, come on now, Will, with your gotcha questions. Do you think I know anything about that?
I know all about invading labia. Labia.
You know how many labias I've invaded?
There's too many labias swirling around in my head.
So, who can tell them apart? They all look alike to me. I don't mean to be sexist. Or labist, as the case may be.
No, not at all.
All labias are major to me, by the way. I just say, all right.
What?
I don't know what.
No, stop it right now.
What country are we talking about now? Because I don't.
Majora or minor? I don't. Which key is this question in? All right, let's go to Bill Kristol on Fox News Sunday.
The whole notion of Occupy Wall Street, that's not a sort of democratic movement of let's participate in the political process. The whole term Occupy is a kind of Marxist term. We're taking over these pieces of public property or private property, like it or not. These are our demands. We're dividing the country. This 1% has to be read out of society. I think it's deeply anti-democratic and anti-American. If I were a liberal who might have been heartened by the Obama mobilization, who might think I still have a chance in 2012 because conservatives, of course, don't have all the answers, I would be deeply worried that Occupy Wall Street is just going to really damage liberalism.
Mm. Exercising your First Amendment rights is unconstitutional.
It's Marxist.
Anti-American.
It's Marxist.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
precisely the opposite.
Antithesis. Of what's American.
Shanhead.
Huh?
He was wrong again.
But
that's so
having
rare.
Said that, what now? You know? How do we move forward?
You know.
I know.
Yeah. Occupy, you know.
Yeah, but it's, you know, a movement is a movement. It's not a physical. It's it doesn't depend just on a physical space, I don't think.
No.
And I've now been to Occupy San Francisco and Occupy Austin. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm telling you, the idea is larger than the. All right, Bill O'Reilly, let's finish. Oh, his new book, his new craptastic book.
God.
We have a tax on my new book, Killing Lincoln.
The Washington Post saying the bookstore at Forge Theater in Washington, where Lincoln was assassinated, is refusing to sell the book.
Because yes. It's crap.
Unfortunately, the statement also says there are inaccuracies in the
book.
Yeah. Well, in 325 pages, there are four minor misstatements, all of which have been correct.
He admits it.
There are also two typeset errors, one involving a date. Now, that's a pretty good record, even for nitpickers who want to hurt the book.
Oh, it's good enough.
It's good enough. Yeah.
So I said that Lee Harvey Oswald killed Lincoln. What?
And the Lincoln had meetings in the Oval Office, which wasn't built until 44 years after Lincoln died. But, so what?
Minor point.
Nitpickers.
History and facts.
Wow. Bill O'Reilly were a student. He just flunked. Yeah, you know what? Nice try, but that's not good enough. Okay.
Yeah, if you put four errors in a term paper,
that's not an A.
No, it's not close. At all.
You think he's that easy as a father? What'd you get? F? Good enough. You got them all wrong. F. Nitpicking teachers. Nitpicking union teachers.
I'm going to write a book about history. Maybe you should know the history.
Yes, exactly. All right.
Shoot your mouth off.
By the way, Chris Matthews, who we're having on later, guess what? He didn't get one thing wrong about Jack Kennedy in his book about Jack Kennedy.
Right.
We'll ask him about Bill O'Reilly's book about Lincoln and how many things are wrong. It's weird. You got all the facts right. You'll have to look into that. 46 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call Stephanie now. She's easy. 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
You okay, Jim? Constipation? Everything okay? 51 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. The smart one, CNN's Christine Roman's coming up to completely undermine...
What, instead of the bald one?
Ali Velshi, from what he... And what he said last week in just a few minutes. All right. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll-free from any... Oh, thank you, Buffalo News. Looky me. I'm on the cover of the Buffalo News, my hometown paper.
Yay.
Well, Buffalo actually, my hometown paper is the Union Sun and Journal in Lockport, or we used to call it the Onion Scum and Urinal. That was a little Lockport humor. Okay. Anyway, thank you, Buffalo News. You know, was it really entirely necessary to print the date of my high school graduation?
1965?
Shut up. What? Right there under the picture, 1979, DeSales High School graduates. Brings her sexy liberal tour to Shays this Saturday. Shays date is a homecoming for the radio host, Stephanie Miller. Look out. Homecoming queen's got a gun, because I am really tired. I was so tired.
The homecoming queen's got a gun!
Yeah, all right. No, I won't. I'm not. No.
No?
No.
Computer says no.
I was so tired, though. Our flight was so bumpy, turbulent, coming back from Austin, and I was so cranky, and I hadn't slept all night.
Oh,
We were waiting for our bags, because, you know, Jim, at LAX, it takes longer to get your bags than the flight. No matter where you're coming from, New Zealand still takes longer for your bags to come out than, And they, I only had a carry-on, and they made me check it, because the flight was so full. It was one of those just irritating.
Ew. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I said to Lisa, I'm like, I want to punch that guy in the... And there was no reason. I just was cranky. I just wanted to punch somebody. I didn't. Just saying.
Lisa has such patience.
You have no idea. No idea. Jason in Michigan, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Jason.
Hi. I was just wondering about Occupy, because I know that they're breaking it all up, and because they say that we have the right for freedom of speech, but don't we also have the right to assemble?
Yeah, that's what, you know, exactly. Jason, that's actually a really good point. That's what I'm wondering, Jim, is what they're basing this on. It obviously has happened elsewhere, but the big news, in case you haven't heard, is the police officers descended on Zuccotti Park in New York, some in riot gear, just after midnight, in a surprise sweep of the Occupy. So, I don't...
Well, Zuccotti
Park was cleared in less than 3 hours. I don't...
It is officially private property. It's not city property, so that may be what they're going on.
All right. Lynn writes, fabulous Austin show. My husband finally got to see what I've been screaming at him about for 2 years. I am trapped in San Antonio. It was like finally being able to take a deep breath in a room full of sanity. Thanks for keeping me sane. First of all, I really feel for people that are hinging their sanity on me. You two know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, but anyway, but that's what we're saying. I don't even think they're going to see the show anymore. They're just getting, you know, just to be with those kind of people and away from those other people on the outside. By the way, the Florida show, I have one, maybe two very special celebrity guests lined up, I believe. I'm all positive.
Recount your blessing, Sunshine State.
Oh, you can almost taste the sunshine.
Because Stephanie Miller is coming to South Florida.
What? Is she finally moving to the Villages?
No. The state with the least popular governor is welcoming this year's most popular comedy tour, the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Show. And it's gonna be hot.
How hot and wet do you like it?
Very hot.
Oh, it's too hot.
On December 10th, the Broward Center's Parker Playhouse in Fort Lauderdale will host the Sexy Liberal Players, led by progressive beach babe Stephanie Miller.
The exotic dancer under the name of Marie, the Flame of Florida.
Tickets are available at BrowardCenter.org or by calling 877-311-SHOW. That's 877-311-7469. South Florida, spring break is coming early this season, and the forecast calls for Cat 5 Sexy Liberal Laughter.
Chris and Yankton, you know, the guy who sends the billboard charts?
Yes.
He says, I don't have a billboard chart from Steph's graduation year of 1979. What was popular on the charts back then? Were Tin Pan Alley songs high atop the billboard gramophone chart? Or did they call it Edison's wax cylinder chart back then?
I am not one of your fans!
Actually, I think the Cars were.
Yeah, oh, that, this is how geeky Chris and Yankton is. Jim yesterday said, what's the French phrase you used?
It's a foreigner song. Agent Provocateur.
Yeah, Agent Provocateur. There you go. It's a foreigner song from 1980-something.
He sent
the whole billboard chart. Mm-hmm. See, now we're talking my vintage. That Foreigner was big when we were in 1979 at DeSales Catholic High School. It was the song you used for the basketball games. Which one am I thinking of? Maybe I'm wrong.
Are you thinking of Alan Parsons Project?
Foreigner songs. Help me out. Which ones am I thinking of? We're popular then. All right. Never mind. Don't help me. Oh. All right.
Cold as Ice?
I got a lot of 70s, 80s songs swirling around. Cold as Ice? Yeah, that could
Urgent.
Be
Urgent?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Really?
Yeah. Those are my vintage.
You use that for basketball?
Maybe I'm thinking of We Will Rock You, and that's entirely that's not
Queen.
Warner. That's Queen. That was wrong. See? A lot of things twirling around in my head.
Everybody knows that's Queen.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh, bless your heart.
Speaking of pathetic, Newt Gingrich has taken the lead in PPP's national polling. He's at 28%. Herman Cain at 25%.
Oh, I am the 18% champion.
18% for Mitt Romney.
I'm the champion, my friends.
Yeah, we are the champions. That's the other one, Queen, also. That's what I meant. I didn't mean Foreigner. Okay. Well, Rick Perry is at 6%. Oh, dear. Michelle Bachmann, Ron Paul at 5. John Huntsman at 3. Gary Johnson, is he still in this?
Yeah,
bless. And Rick Santorum, each at 1.
Oh.
I've got a 1. You're number 1, Rick Santorum.
No, he's also number 2.
Wow. All right. Compared to a month ago, Gingrich is up 13 points, while Cain has dropped by 5 points. Romney has gone down 4. Although a fair amount of skepticism remains about the recent allegation against Cain, there's still no doubt they're taking a toll on his image. His net favorability down 25 points over the last month, and that's before yesterday's
unfortunate
clip. I'm planning
to be down 999 points.
I think so. There's reason to think if Cain continues to fade, Gingrich will continue to gain.
Frankly.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
And I hope they don't mean wait.
Really?
Because,
the president yesterday, who's got to be laughing his ass off.
I am going to make a practice of not commenting on whatever is said in Republican debates until they've got an actual nominee.
Okay. Yeah, well, just like
that
a Kenyan,
said,
not to comment on...
They were high-fiving and having a beer summit watching the Herman Cain yesterday in the White House. Please let it be him. All right, 58 minutes after the hour. Christine Romans from CNN next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Aha, It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2. Jim Ward with an interesting observation.
Well, there's an article in truthout.org. Violence and vandalism don't threaten the system. Occupy's positive image does. We're confronted on Wednesday by two images of violence on college campuses. On one hand, Berkeley students were peacefully protesting and got police batons to the gut. On the other hand, at Penn State, the students were turning on lampposts, overturning vans and destroying things and throwing rocks and fireworks at police. And says the takeaway is obvious. Rioting requires no courage, no moral righteousness, no intelligence, and no revolutionary spirit, just rage. So, you know.
Yeah. No, interesting point. But, by the way, Jerry Sandusky needs to stop talking now.
Yeah. He claims not to be a pedophile. He just likes raping little boys in the shower.
No, horseplay. He calls it horseplay.
Likes
to, I could say that, you know, I have done some of those things. I have horsed around with kids. I have showered after workouts. I have hugged them, and I have touched their leg without intent of sexual contact.
Yeah, his lawyer said he's just a big kid. He just likes horsing around.
Well,
yikes.
You know, that's usually people who do that sort of thing as adults were themselves victims of abuse.
That's just creepy.
Doubles the tragedy.
Oh, boy. All right. Sexy Liberal, as we know, started in Madison, gave money to the recalls. Mm-hmm. And that's how this whole thing began. Joe in Madison just signed the recall for Scott Walker. Hey, Joe.
Hey, yeah, it feels really great. Signed recall not only for Scott Walker, but for Rebecca Cleafish, the lieutenant governor, who's been
awesomely,
she's been rubber stamping right along with it. So it's a beautiful day here in Fitzwalkerstown.
All right, Joe. Thanks, honey. Thanks for the update. Sign it. Sign the recall. Do it. All right. Kids, we had the hairless prophet of doom on last week, Ali Velshi.
Yes.
to talk about his new book, which is How to Speak Money, which is co-written with Christine Romans, who is the smart one and will now undermine everything Ali said. Hello, good morning, Christine Romans.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm good. Listen, I'm with you. I already told Ali. I am a saver. I am cautious. I am the Christine Romans.
See, that guy can negotiate for things I didn't even know you could negotiate for. That guy, I mean, when we were writing this book, we were doing all this research about how men and women are different in the workplace or with their investments or saving and spending money, I realized we were each exactly what we were finding out in the research. It was irritating and fascinating at the same time.
Much like Ali Velshi. Now, Christine, the book explores how men and women save and invest differently, but it's funny, I read the notes and I'm you. Christine's a saver, Ali's a spendy, Christine is cautious, Ali likes risk. I was telling him, I think I lost a quarter in a slot machine once in Vegas. I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah. It's so true, but one of the reasons is, like, women, when they attain something, when they get it, they're so worried about losing it. And men, when they attain something, and these are generalities, so you can, stop all the hate mail, but men, when they attain something, they're much more likely to risk it because they know they're going to attain it again. Or they think, sometimes falsely, that they have the ability to attain it again. And it's a very different way that we view, once we acquire something, how afraid women are to lose it.
You know, Christine, that's a really good point. Now that I think about it, when you think about the Trumps or whoever in the world, normally is men, these guys you hear about gaining and then losing huge fortunes and then getting them back. I don't know whether that is gender related, but we just told a story in the first hour that I actually reuse paper in my printer, and I put it in upside down the wrong way, so Chris had to resend my show. But that's how cheap I actually am.
Yeah. Is it because you're cheap or because you're trying to save the world?
I'm going to go with save the world, which is the same reason I pee in the shower. Anyway, Christine, it saves water. My point is... what?
You don't poop in the shower, do you?
No, I'm not that green.
Move on.
Or brown.
Now, Christine, one time that Democrats and Republicans both pee in the shower, but only Democrats admit that they pee in the shower.
Exactly. Exactly. It is interesting. I was saying to Ali, I've never had a dime in the stock market. I don't have the stomach for it.
Really? You don't have you must have a 401k.
Oh, well, that, yeah. I mean, but it's in the lowest risk granny kind of place it possibly can be.
Pretend I'm 100 years old and have zero intolerance for risk. Well, you shouldn't do that. You must read Chapter 9, and I'm sure Ali said the same thing. But you should have especially because you're, a vibrant young woman, you've got time on your side, so you want to do have some exposure, especially if you're going to especially after the catastrophe we've had the last few years. People have been buying up stock pretty cheap over the past 2 years if they've been working their plan and sticking to it.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say, because my accountant just said that to me, that my retirement account is like, you really ought to maybe just risk a little bit. This is really kind of silly because you're you're really not making anything. And I'm like, don't touch it. Don't touch grandma's money.
People who are risking their money who are in the stock market are saying, I'm not making anything anyway. I mean, the thing about the last 10 periods of the stock, 10, last 10 years of the stock market has been infuriating for young investors, quite frankly, because your only experience in the stock market is either flat or losing money. Even if you count in, you know, the returns from dividend yields and that kind of stuff. So it's been really frustrating. It's been a frustrating decade for stock investors, no question. And it's been even worse for savers, because think, if you've got all your money in a CD, you're getting nothing. You're getting half a percent in a bank account. So it's just...
They're charging you more in fees than you're making in...
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's really hard. I mean, it's very hard to decide what to do. But one of the things about the How to Speak Money moniker, the title of the book, is that so many people are like, look, this is Greek to me. I don't care. I don't even look. Once a year, I kind of like look to see if I'm contributing to the 401k. And then other than that, I don't pay attention. And we wanted to kind of demystify it. It's not really as hard as it seems.
Yeah. Well, I'll get more specifics for you, but I'm in apparently something you cannot lose money in. It's that safe. But you also don't make anything.
Good. Yeah, good. That's absolutely true. The risk and reward, that's the trade-off.
So you also talk in the book about how couples can reconcile, because all couples have differences, I think, you know, and again, whether you say it's intrinsic differences between men and women or whatever kind of partners they are, how do you counsel that?
Well, it's interesting because savers are attracted to spenders and spenders to savers and the like, and when we talk to people who counsel couples about money problems in their marriage, they find they've never found, like, two spenders who really stick together. Well, if they do, they don't stick together very long because they go out of business.
But they live in a van down by the river. Yeah.
But, you know, Allie, I mean, well, the things I admire about Allie as a friend and a coworker is that he's much more likely to go out on a limb on something. You know, like, he's much more likely to take a risk or to do, and I'm attracted to that his confidence in money matters. Me, on the other hand, I'm very frugal, and he is attracted to that in me, my frugality. Mm-hmm. And so that's a pretty good mix, but there are a lot of couples who don't talk about money. They don't address it. They don't even know how much student debt they have or how much credit card debt they have when they come into a marriage. And that, all of that stuff festers. And sometimes the frugal part of the couple then sees the person who they thought was generous when they were courting, and now they're like, what are you doing spending all our money like this?
Now it bothers me.
You think you're God? You can just throw money around like that? And so the things that you liked about someone become a problem later on.
Well, isn't that the way relationships go?
Clearly,
it's so
a lot of
irritating how you breathe. what was I going to say? There's a lot of good advice in the book. First of all, how to ask the boss for a raise. In this economy, that's got to be hard.
Hey, yeah.
Go ahead. Chris, go ahead, ask.
Can I have a raise?
No. Go ahead, help him.
You have to be very careful about it. And that's also a men and women thing. So women, when I say Allie knows how to negotiate for things that I didn't even know you could negotiate for, it's so interesting that, think of this, at 25 years old, if a woman doesn't ask for a raise, a $5,000 raise, doesn't know to go for it, that over the course of her lifetime is something like $500,000 that she's behind.
Wow.
And men are more likely to go after, and it's not because they're men, but it's because something about the institutional way that we address the workplace from very early on. So the crazy thing is, the younger you are, you know, I always say time is your best friend. The younger you are, the best thing you can do to a young person is you can help them by being a mentor or a sponsor to figure out how to get the best deal for themselves early on, because it sets the tone for the rest of a career. It's all about expectations and going out there and saying, look, I deserve this, and not being bold and being, you know, brash and
right.
And,
well, the good thing
nasty.
Is I've crushed all of their dreams and expectations.
Give me a raise or I'll set the building on fire.
That doesn't work.
It's good to crush their spirits really early so they just lose the will to ask for anything.
You get free coffee. That's what you get. Next year we'll provide the creamer and sugar.
It's good to crush all independent thought. That's my plan.
Absolutely.
Now, we always talk about housing because obviously, you know, there's always talk about, is it the right time to buy? Are interest rates going to rise or fall? I mean, that's always the catch-22, isn't it? If you, at least for me, we've talked about this. When you own a house, you go, well, okay, it's a really bad time to sell. It may be a great time to buy, but, you know, how do you...
You have some funky mortgage, right?
I beg your pardon.
I do.
No, well, actually, but it's funky and turned out to be lucky for me.
I got
a no-doc loan, interest only, when I was out of work for like 2 years, because they were giving them out like kind of like Skittles, those mortgages.
Yep.
And
yep.
But now I'm paying like 2% because it's adjustable, but it's tied to the LIBOR, you know, the London.
LIBOR.
Yeah.
LIBOR. I never thought we'd be talking about LIBOR rates on this program.
Yeah,
I love it. I love it. Okay, well, look, Allie and I are in two different leagues here. He thinks this is a time for anybody who can to be buying, to absolutely go out and leverage up on real estate. Me, I think that there are too many people, and I'm seeing this in the Occupy Wall Street crowd, too many people who haven't had any opportunities to save the money to get in and become a buyer. They don't have the job that they used to be able to get their first rung in. So for me, I think that for a lot of people in the 99%, they need to be repairing their balance sheet first. They need to be saving money, raising the credit score, paying out of debt, and don't worry so much about this old, you know, lifelong dream of owning a home to get into the middle class. I think cash is king. It's just cash is king.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Yes, yeah. Jim, are you underwater?
I don't think so, but yeah. I've definitely lost a lot of value in that.
Yeah,
yeah, that doesn't sound like a very confident, I don't think so.
No, that was not very... Well, you know, Christine, that's what I was saying. I've been lucky. I'm not underwater. My house is still worth more than I paid for it. But, again, it's down, you know, from what obviously I could have sold it for, whatever, right in 2006 or something.
And it's all location. Look, it's all location. Every part of the country is different. I also think that, and I've profiled some people in the book who, you know, young people who, you know, look, you got a great job. You're working for a big retail company. Do you really want to buy your first little condo in Baltimore right now, even because your mother's telling you you're throwing your rent money away when you might have to move to L.A. or you might have to move to Oregon or you might have to move to Texas? You don't. You want the mobility. You want to take opportunities in this economy when they present themselves. You don't want anything that's going to hold you back.
So do I stick with my funky mortgage? That's the main reason I generally have you on.
I think you are fine in your funky mortgage by accident. I think you've done all the right things. Stephanie.
Yeah, thank you. Exactly. I'm not the smart one. I'm just the lucky one. We should write a book, The Smart One and the Lucky One. Christine Romans, the book is How to Speak Money. Thanks for telling us how to speak money, Christine.
Love it.
All right. So thank you, honey. See you soon.
Bye, guys.
There she goes.
Hey, that funky mortgage whacker.
Ooh, yeah, I'm really a lot luckier than I am smart. That's for sure-sies.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. 18 minutes after the hour. Much more to come. Charlie Pierce coming up. Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the political party line now. 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller. If you have a brain.
This is from your...
I get it. It was the number one song in the year I graduated high school, 1979.
Yes.
I hate this song. Always have, always will.
Well, then why did you have me make it as a bump?
Apparently, because it was the number one song.
Oh.
The year I graduated from high school. All right. Here's a pop quiz for you. What year was my girlfriend Lisa born in?
1979. 78. Oh. Wow. Yeah, she was born after the first Star Wars came out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear.
All right. Oh. Yes.
Wow.
You should see how many of my witty references fall flat on a daily basis. All right.
She could have been an accident I had in college.
All right.
Oh,
heavens.
With Daphne Zuniga.
No. What? Not a chance.
No? Oh, come on.
All right. Off to my hometown, speaking of which, of Buffalo, New York, this Saturday. Get your tickets going fast at Shays. By the way, I have to thank this fine American from the Austin Post wrote a great review of Sexy Liberal in Austin this past Saturday. Gavino Iglesias, my new future husband. Witty, sexy, and liberal. It was Saturday night. The Long Center was packed. Comedians John Fugelsang, Hal Sparks, Stephanie Miller took the stage. They accomplished three things, engaging the crowd, poking fun at the current state of affairs in the Republican race, and then he forgot the third thing. See, it was a Rick Perry joke. Can't get enough of that.
Hey.
The Sexy Liberal Show delivered on its promise of smart political commentary last weekend, and the three talented comedians that stepped on stage developed a loving relationship with the Austin crowd. Mine's a little more loving than most. I touch most of them.
Hmm.
And Sexually Herb. I told them I'm a combination of Herb. I just said Herb.
Herb Kane.
Herman Kane and Rick Perry. I get drunk and I sexually harass the entire front row.
Yeah.
And they pay for it. Okay. Let's see. Republicans.
How'd you manage that swindle?
Wow.
Oh. And now I'm selling it to my high school friends who have heard the same joke since 1979, and they're paying for it. Psych! Republicans got the deconstruction treatment from all three comedians separately, and then as a tag team, the result was absolutely hilarious, intelligent, and truly honest. Then there's some really good stuff about John and Hal, but that's not important.
Yeah.
Last but not least... came Stephanie Miller. Besides the comedy, she ran around the audience, danced, humped the stage, and even made out with her girlfriend. Without a doubt, she put the sexy in the Sexy Liberal Show.
Wow.
Gotta give the folks a little something extra. When it was all said and done, Austin enjoyed some intelligent comedy from a trio of comedians who were helping many politically minded folks out there breathe easier when looking at the stand-up panorama since George Carlin's demise.
Wow.
Thank you. If you have a chance, definitely check out Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour. There's nothing sexier than witty comedians actually using their brains to poke fun at those politicians who so obviously lack intellectual prowess. Talking to you, Herman Cain.
Oh, I got some prowess.
Let's hear the horrible minute and 4 seconds again.
So you agree with President Obama on Libya or not?
Oh, boy.
Okay, Libya.
Oh,
oh boy.
President Obama supported the uprising, correct?
Oh, no.
President Obama called for the removal of Gaddafi. Just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing before I say, yes, I agreed. I know I didn't agree. I do not agree with the way he handled it for the following reason.
Okay.
Oh, wait, that's the other thing.
No, that's a different one.
Oh, wow.
Oh. Oh, no.
Holy crap.
I got to go back and see. Got all this stuff twirling around in my head.
Yeah, yeah, like bourbon.
Specifically, what are you asking me? Did I agree or not disagree with Obama?
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
I need a hair of the dog. I need a...
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Wow. His advisor said what now?
Oh, that he was only working on 4 hours of sleep.
I do this show on zero sleep mostly.
You do.
And it's just as incomprehensible, but I'm not running for president.
It's a lot more entertaining than
yeah.
Yes. Hello. Wow. That was just, seriously, on the day when, you know, his sexual harassment, accuser got back up from her ex-boyfriend, you thought that would be the big story? No.
No. Computer says no.
No, that's... That was just a minute of really awful. This is proving Tucker Carlson's point. Why are we pretending this man is qualified to be president? Why are we even pretending this? Oh, that was painful. And I sympathize, all I'm saying. Okay.
No.
No. Okay, this is, help me out. What is this? Stephanie?
The Charlie Pierce Show?
Sure.
It's some kind
of
show.
Yeah, it's the Charlie Pierce Show next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Huh?
Stephanie Miller.
It's amazing.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. How do you not love CNN, Jim? The Chiron is, what else is swirling, twirling around in Kermit Cain's head? Manly pizza toppings. Lion bitches. Tutti Frutti ice cream. Bourbon. All right. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. It's our favorite time in Tuesdays. There's only one man now that understands. And that's the author of Idiot America.
Pierce.
Charlie Pierce, political columnist for Esquire.com.
Why's everybody always laughing with me?
Good morning, Charlie Pierce.
My mind is twirling.
Wow, just when you thought you could not see, hear a minute of awful worse than Rick Perry's brain fart, that here comes Herman Cain.
I spent 5 years of my life in Milwaukee. It's a tough town, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Do not take prisoners in Milwaukee. He's lucky they didn't make him play bar dice.
I mean, honestly, is that even more than the sexual allegations? Is that just it? I mean, that was just horrifying.
Libya, Obama. Let me see if I figure out who both these things are.
I think it wasn't even clear Obama was president. He's like, he's president.
Obama's the president, right? Okay, I got that one.
Yeah, that was, wow.
Yeah, that's some pretty ugly stuff.
Yikes.
However, he's still in a four-way tie in Iowa.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I don't know, again, these national polls, the PP people, but it has Gingrich in
here
the lead.
Comes.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, Mitt Romney does, I mean, unless Newt really decides to be a statesman, which he can't do because it's just not in him to do it for longer than 10 or 15 minutes of time. Mitt Romney's not going to know what hit him. I mean, because this guy isn't Rick Perry. He's not Herman Cain. This is a guy who's been lighting things on fire for 30 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think Mitt has got to summon up whatever it is he's got left for guts and get out there.
Yeah, it really is. Oh, sorry, I left my cell phone on. Sorry, Charlie Pierce. Okay, now...
What are you doing?
What? Nothing. I apologize. I'm a professional.
She has a lot of things twirling around inside her head.
I got stuff twirling around, Charlie Pierce.
I got the Kaluba on my iPhone, too. Rudy twirling around in my head.
I just discovered the button
on
my iPhone.
That was a pretty funny line, by the way.
Which?
What he said about Tutti Frutti. I thought that wasn't bad.
Yeah, well, Michelle Bachmann is Tutti Frutti ice cream. Yeah, he's, I don't know what to say about this.
It doesn't make
him
presidential, though.
No.
No, I didn't say that. It made him a pretty funny guy in the bar. That's all.
Charlie Pierce, great stuff as usual on Esquire.com. This is what your super duper committee has come to.
Yeah.
The president, by the way, talking about the super committee.
My hope is that over the next several days, the congressional leadership on the super committee go ahead and bite the bullet and do what needs to be done. Because the math won't change. There's no magic formula.
Mm. They're not so super.
No, they're not so super. Not so super. Okay.
When Michelle drops out, I'm going to miss that soundbite so much.
Oh, we're going to keep it going.
Oh, no, we're not going to lose
no,
that.
No, that's in our machine permanently.
Yeah, you know it's a bad idea when you say it looks as though the super committee, which both Newt Gingrich and I agree was an absolutely terrible idea right from the jump, is headed toward the monumental selling out of the poor and middle class, that it was its ultimate goal from the very founding. And you point out helpfully the super committee exists because Republicans in the House of Representatives treated their responsibilities like chimps being handed RPGs, and it will conclude by pretending none of it ever happened, and that properly trained chimps can make really good soldiers.
They could ride Segways.
Yeah,
as we've seen in the video.
Yeah, backwards. Charlie,
no, it's different.
So yeah, I mean, we didn't expect much out of this, and then we got what we were hoping
for.
Well,
I mean, it was an abdication of responsibility from the start. The Democrats on it seemed perfectly willing to roll over and cave on things they shouldn't roll over and cave for. Meanwhile, the Republicans are claiming that if we close a couple of loopholes and cost some billionaires some boutonniere money, that we're somehow equalizing the sacrifice, which is nonsense. But what really amazed me the other day was when they said, well, we're going to do with tax revenues, but we're going to deal with that later.
Yeah.
And the other thing is they're already setting things up so that if they do fail and the quote-unquote triggers are supposed to happen, the military trigger will never happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Those cuts will never happen. I mean, Leon Panetta's been out there lobbying against them for almost a year now. So, yeah, I mean, the whole thing was an exercise in beltway wise man kabuki from the start.
Charlie, once again, I always say this, that I think the American people, whether, you know, you're looking at what started in Madison, the Occupy movements, what happened in the elections on Tuesday, they're so far out ahead of, you know, even Democrats.
They're far ahead of Democrats.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. I mean, they're sitting there pointing the way, going, this is the way you can win an election. See this road right here that we're on, you know, 100 yards down, the, you know, 100 miles down the road from you folks, this is the way you should come. We'll wait. You know, we'll be here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a greater disconnect between what the political elites are doing in Washington and what people in the country want than I've seen in 40 years.
Yep. Great piece on the, health care law going to the Supreme Court. Kathleen Sebelius, yesterday.
We're confident that the law is constitutional, will be upheld as constitutional. We're eager to have states engage fully in putting together their exchanges.
You know, as you say, the court sharpens its knives to disembowel America. I mean, just the one thing yesterday I was looking at as a clear conflict is Clarence Thomas. His wife is on record.
Yeah.
I mean, and he's on record saying we agree on everything.
And nothing's going to change. He's going to sit on this case. He's not going to recuse himself because he has no shame. And there's nobody on that court that's going to try to shame him out of it. So once again, you're looking at Anthony Kennedy as the man who controls the man who controls democracy. He's going to be the fifth vote one way or the other.
Well,
I'm nowhere near as confident as Secretary Sebelius is, by the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you point out, look at Citizens United. Look at what huge majorities of the American people are against that decision. And that's what's, you know, our friend Ian Millhiser wrote a great piece. I mean, that's what's terrifying. They're elected for life. I mean, excuse me, not elected. They're for life.
Yep.
They don't have to, you know, worry about elections.
By the way, if you've been reading the news today, not if Rick Perry has his way. Rick Perry is proposing, it's Tuesday, so it's time for another reboot of the Perry campaign. So he's put together a blueprint on how to tear Washington up by the roots and rebuild it efficiently.
Awesome.
And one of them is term limits for federal judges.
Oy vey.
Wow.
Speaking of the candidates, another great piece, but you write the South Carolina debate, the ultimate waterboarding championship. The president spoke out about this yesterday.
Let me just say this. They're wrong. Waterboarding is torture. It's contrary to America's traditions. It's contrary to our ideals. That's not who we are. That's not how we operate.
And as you so helpfully point out, Charlie, that's why we executed the Japanese when they did it.
Well, yeah, that was in response to Rick Perry announcing he will be for waterboarding until the day he dies.
Yeah.
Well, you know, so were the Japanese. You know, they were for waterboarding until the day we died. They died. You know right. how they died? Yeah. We killed them. That's how.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's just a fresh horror show, every Republican debate.
Well, that was astonishing yeah. to me, and I don't think it got the coverage it should have, was that torture is now a litmus test for a Republican Party.
Yeah.
There's anti-abortion and no taxes, no tax hikes on anybody ever at any time, and torture.
Yeah.
Those are your three hurdles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's the next horrifying thing that has been cheered at the Republican debate, right? I mean, it's yay for waterboarding.
Well, they all got big hands when they said that. And, of course, Ron Paul and John Huntsman are standing up there being these kind of, you know, Debbie Downers about, you know, the rule of law and stuff. And, yeah. Oh, nobody wants to talk about that.
Yeah, yeah. Charlie, we've talked, obviously, so many times, but how does this play out and when do you think this Republican field?
Oh, I think Mitt's going to have to work for the nomination all the way through South Carolina and Florida for sure, because now that Newt's not going away, you get Newt down in South Carolina, that's home turf.
Yeah.
I mean that's the Republican Party he worked so hard to build down there. So I mean I think Mitt's going to have to work for it.
I love the you're obviously been covering Mitt, being in Boston for so many years, but there's a great piece today. Romney grinds down GOP resistance. Conservatives don't like him. They really don't like him. But as Mitt Romney continues to outshine his rivals in every debate, looks more and more like the last man standing. Even some longtime critics are slowly, in some cases bitterly, coming around to the idea. I love how they're just so like. I think one of his advisors, Charlie, actually compared it to Christmas shopping. So, you know, people shop when they want to, all the pre-Christmas sales, and people still do last-minute Christmas shopping. Yeah. And Romney is like that last piece of thing that you just know is all that's left.
Let's go to Walgreens.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well,
yeah, Romney, the last one left on the shelf, last thing left on the shelf at Walmart.
Yeah. It's already like the Island of Misfit Toys. He's just like the Charlie in the box. Like, oh, really? Is this all we got?
No yeah. child wants to play with a Charlie in the box.
That's all they got.
Yeah.
I mean, E.J. Dionne actually wrote a piece about, oh, maybe it's someone new should get in. I mean, there's no time,
is there? No, please, God, no. I'm yeah. let me guess. Mitch Daniels, Jeb Bush, who are we talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, they're basically saying, you know, even the people on the right
That's
are saying
what this field lacks, by the way, one of the Bush children.
Right. There you go. There you go. I just love the way that it's reported. It's a tone of resignation, if not despair. Because they've lost their window of opportunity. They were what's been the anybody but Mitt block, has been like the strongest, basically that whatever that is has been the strongest candidate, right?
Yeah, and they keep flitting from one to the other, and the person
right.
as soon as it's almost like these people are too heavy. As soon as they jump on someone's back, the person falls over.
Right.
But I don't think Newt is that way. I mean, this is what Newt's been aiming for since you know. 6 months before he was born.
Frankly.
He is the definer of the rules of Western civilization. He said that during one of his divorce actions.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who literally believes he can say and do anything because he has been commanded by a higher power to lead Western civilization to victory over whatever it is Western civilization has to have a victory over.
Wow.
And this is a guy who believes this stuff. This is a guy whose megalomania makes, you know, Bill O'Reilly look like Francis of Assisi.
All right. Esquire.com. Great stuff this week. Charlie Pierce, our Tuesday pal. See you
great
this week.
Great stuff on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I hung up. What did he say?
He had a joke about Berlusconi, but yeah. Bunga. Gunga.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very
the
good.
Show's available on podcast, so
yes. yeah,
seek it out in your iTunes account.
There you go. 45 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
This is a disgusting display.
Boy, you can say that again.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dear.
What?
And why do we play this? How sad for you and me that you have this as a bump and I asked for it.
Oh, because it was the number 9 song of 1979.
Yeah, my year I graduated high school, because I'm going for my big hometown sexy liberal show in Buffalo this mm-hmm. Saturday. Chris and Yankton. Helpfully and geekfully sent along
back
the Billboard.
To the countdown.
Yeah, the Billboard chart for 1979. Wow, Jim, we wondered where all that wuss rock came from. All from 1979, 70s wuss rock. Mm. Boy,
I'm guessing
men
Dennis DeYoung is involved.
Big wussies. Yes, that's what Chris says. Attached final Billboard Hot 100 chart from January 5th. This from 1979. Mm-hmm. Number one, Pina Colada song number two.
Right.
Jim and I hate that with the heat of a thousand white hot suns. Chris says, I also know the top ten contains several of my most hated songs of all time, including Babe by Styx.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh. Oh, God. What's rock?
Oh, this was awful.
These guys like girly pizza.
Casio.
Wow. That was 1979 technology.
With the piano. Oh, wow.
Dear.
That's bad.
Ooh, ouch.
It's already bad.
Yeah. It's not even started. I'm having a flashback.
Hello?
Yeah,
hello?
Hello? Anybody there?
Hello?
Anybody
else? Oh, oh, now it's starting.
They fall asleep on the Casio. That was like a Herman Cain moment.
He's still thinking of the words.
My cords swirling around in my hand. Yeah. Nothing's swirling around. Was I supposed to keep playing?
God, the intro's here.
Oh, this is horrible.
Babe, I believe I need it. I must be on my way.
Okay, go.
Fine,
just go. Slam.
Take your damn
piano
and go.
Oh, my God, speaking of which, the number one song, Please Don't Go, Casey and the Sunshine Man. Why were men such wussies in this? Oh, they're so whiny.
Oh.
No wonder I went gay.
This was catchy, though.
Please don't go. No.
No.
Oh. Why were intros so long?
I want you to know.
I hate that whole falsetto
here. Oh, please. Oh, God.
Oh,
jeez.
Oh, okay. My
I once stood in line behind KC of KC and the Sunshine Band at an outlet mall out near Palm Springs.
That's sad. What else? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. Do that to me one more time. Oof. Do that to me.
The Captain and Tennille.
Let's see, ladies. Oh, we don't talk anymore. That was an... All right. They were all just pathetic. We don't talk anymore. It's just all... God,
everyone broke up in 1979, didn't they?
A lot of breakups.
Yeah.
Probably because men were such wusses.
It's
so whiny.
Been to me.
Stop being so whiny. What's that all-time whiniest one we ever thought of, Jim? I can't remember now.
Oh.
I don't... All right.
Oh, wait a minute. I blocked it out of my mind.
Yes, of course
I
you
I got
have.
Too many good songs swirling around in my head.
All right. Wow. Have you ever read the WorldNet Daily?
Speaking
of Herman Cain?
Yes, I do, for show prep.
They have something in common with Fox News. They always have these, like, experts of some sort, like pop psychologists. Don't you hate pop psychology?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, they publish...
Talking to you, Dr. Laura.
Yeah. What? Chris.
What?
Louise. They published an exclusive opinion piece by Breitbart bloggers, Dr. Gina somebody and Dr. Dathan somebody else. Paterno. Oh, wonder if there's any relation there. They purport to profile two types of sexual predators, declare that Cain doesn't fit those profiles, conclude he must not have committed the acts that he's...
Oh, well, then our work is done here.
By contrast, they claim that Sharon Bialik, one of Cain's accusers, perfectly fits the profile of, quote, contrived victim slash false accuser. The piece misses the basic facts about the accusations that he's against.
Fact schmacks. We have an opinion.
Yeah. That's helpful. Oh, Fox News. What? They didn't do real journalism in the Cain interview? They continued their history of favorable treatment of Herman Cain with a nearly half-hour-long interview that completely ignored questions that have been raised about the legality of his early funding to his presidential campaign. Two of his top campaign staffers ran a nonprofit group that paid for early campaign expenses, which is generally, Jim, known as illegal.
Right.
That's the word I'm searching for. I got a lot of things twirling in my head, but illegal was the word I was looking for. In September 2010, by the way, Cain noted that Neil Cavuto's been trying to drag me into a presidential announcement. Cain also called Cavuto one of his closest friends. So, weirdly, magically, there were no tough questions in the Neil Cavuto interview.
Well, what do you know?
All right, here's the sad story.
I seem to remember someone accusing him of not doing journalism.
Huh. Yeah.
Oh, that was me.
Yeah.
In one of the many times I was fired from the television in jobs I don't get paid for.
Recused yourself.
Mm-hmm. And so I think you were right.
Journalist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I mentioned. He didn't cotton to that idea.
No, he did not.
No.
He took you to the woodshed the next day when you couldn't defend yourself.
Oh, boy. All right. Romney grinds down GOP resistance. Oh, this is just a sad little story.
I'm grinding down the resistance.
Woof.
Woof, woof. You're going to get my belt sander.
Yeah, longtime critics are slowly, in some cases bitterly, coming around to the idea he may end up as the GOP nominee. Yeah. He may be, even more than John McCain, the nominee they hate the most.
Yeah.
The anybody but Mitt bloc has plainly failed to put up a real fight, at least so far, and with only 8 weeks to go before the Iowa caucuses, skeptical elements of the Republican base have begun to worry they may have missed the opportunity to stop him. I just love that. The Christmas analogy. It's Christmas shopping until the last minute.
Yeah.
Mitt is all that's left. He's the, what's the thing that shoots jelly on the Island of Misfit Toys? He's that.
The pop gun.
Yeah.
Mm.
The water pistol that shoots jam.
Yeah.
That's all they've got left.
Or the train with square wheels.
Exactly. Well, I'm definitely square.
Yeah.
There's nothing not square about me.
Some of the conservative leaders who acknowledge Romney will probably be their party's nominee have done so with a tone of resignation, if not despair.
Okay.
RedState.com founder Eric Erickson authored a post lamenting Romney's apparent inevitability and forecasting that he would likely be defeated in the general election.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next whatever.
Oh, boy. God. Mitt Romney will be the nominee because the other candidates right now are a pretty pathetic lot. This is a right-wing blogger. As much as the American public does not like Barack Obama, that's actually not true. They like him. They are, you know, his approval rating because of the economy largely is not great, but they actually, favorability, they like him.
Yeah, the American people being people who work at Fox News, apparently.
Yes. Yeah. They loathe a man, Romney, so fueled with ambition that he will say or do anything to get himself elected. Mitt Romney is that man. Republican strategist said most of the other candidates, except maybe for Newt, the biggest problem is the believability factor. The can I see them, you being president of the United States? Most people can envision Mitt Romney being president. Well, I'm in Hollywood, so I can imagine him being cast as president.
Yeah, exactly.
He looks presidential. He's presidential clip art. But can I actually see him being president? No.
Computer says no.
He's central casting presidential.
Yes.
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 He's president-ish.
He is human clip artish. All right. Fine American stack. Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan's legal advisor resigns in support of Occupy Oakland, taking a stand. So the city, Oakland, same thing happened as in New York. A riot gear-clad police evicted the Occupy Oakland tent city. Outraged by the action taken against Occupy Oakland, Dan Siegel, who had been serving as Mayor Gene Kwan's legal advisor, decided to resign. On Twitter, he wrote he was resigning to support Occupy Oakland and oppose the 1%. By the way, guess who's firing up the liberal base?
Who?
Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
This is what I mean about she's the spirit of the Occupy movement. Mm-hmm. I know she took some heat for that, but basically, I mean, she is the one, I think, that embodies the whole idea of the Occupy movement. And she is firing them up in Massachusetts. She's running even with Scott Brown.
Yep.
To take back Ted Kennedy's seat. And that is I think, one of our best shots and also, you know, emblematic of everything that's going on with all these Occupy movements. The headline is Elizabeth Warren fires up the liberal base in Massachusetts. She's filling a void for liberal but disillusioned Democrats who blocked President Obama, attracting attention, money, and help in Massachusetts. We will keep a close eye on that one. Somebody was saying if you're in a, you know, you're Democrat safe, send her a couple of bucks.
Yep.
Why not? All right, 58 minutes after the hour, Chris Matthews and Katrina Vandenhoevel next hour. Stay tuned on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer, Chris LaVoy, voice D80, Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. You made an interesting point this morning, Chris.
What?
Your job, which is to take all the I give you, because
that's right.
I take out everything that's going wrong in my life on you.
Yes.
And you said?
Well, that's why I have an executive.
That's why an E. There's an E before my P.
Yes.
That's why you're executive producer. To take all my crap. I can blame you for everything. Like the fact that the sexy liberal tour is killing me. It is killing me. I'm driving me into an early grave, and it's all your fault.
Why
did I agree to this? I don't... I think I'm getting close to my Rose moment in Buffalo this Saturday. SexyLiberal.com, SexyLiberal on Facebook, we're all the ticket information, the big hometown show this Saturday. Victoria writes, Steph, as you may recall, if you're not already befuddled by your daily box of Chardonnay, not yet, soon, I have plans to file a class action lawsuit against Stephanie Miller International.
Oh.
That's probably your fault, too.
Probably.
I listened to the newscast, and you read my intent to sue letter over the airwaves. Hal Sparks. Oh, because I can't remember now. Oh, because I used her iPhone to take a picture of my hoo-ha at one of the Sexy Liberal shows.
Mm-hmm.
Hal Sparks suggested I might have put the pants-related photo you took with my camera to music. Thank you, Mr. Sparks. Possible songs, Commando by the Ramones, No Panties by Trina, or I Like the Crotch on You by R. Kelly.
Wow.
Hal helpfully suggested that she put that to music and put it on the interwebs. The
R. Kelly has a song called I Like the Crotch
subtle,
on You?
Subtle.
Mm.
Mm. Oh. R. Kelly and Sandusky do a yeah. Oh, could that get any creepier? He needs to hush now.
Yeah.
Coach Sandusky. I like horseplay.
I'm just a big kid.
Okay. Yeah, that is creepy. All right. Kids, so Sexy Liberal Buffalo, then Fort Lauderdale up next. And 2012 already piling up, and that's your fault.
Yep. All my fault.
Portland is January 7th. Phoenix, Arizona, February 25th. Chicago, March 3rd. All of these tickets, by the way, going fast. I think we're going to be at sellout very soon. Madison, Wisconsin is April 14th, where it all began, and then up next in May.
The Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Show made Minnesota one of their first stops on their wildly popular world tour in 2011.
Minnesota.
Stephanie and her Sexy Liberal players are coming back to the Twin Cities since the first time was so Minnesota nice.
They call me Minnesota nice.
On May 12th, 2012. The State Theater will host the triumphant return of the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour featuring John Fugelsang.
You're a smooth, you know.
Hal Sparks.
Little guy, kind of funny looking.
And Mama herself, Stephanie Miller.
You're darn tootin'.
Come on in, tell me, Mama.
Get your tickets online at Ticketmaster.com or by calling Ticketmaster at 1-800-745-3000. Minneapolis, Minnesota. Join the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour at the State Theater on May 12th and go for another brilliant helping of Sexy Liberal Sassiness.
Because Stephanie Miller.
There's a lot of chutzpah.
Yeah! Chutzpah! All right, Eric in Ohio writes, hey, Steph, since you're dating a child, it seems appropriate. Hot Child of the City was the number one song the year Lisa was born. All right. Hush, everyone,
hot
hush.
Hot Child in the City.
That was awful.
I got Tim in Dallas explained the Mann Act joke. The Mann Act is prevents you from bringing minors across state lines. So that someone was going to... She's 33. I'm not a Sandusky, for God's sake.
That's the inappropriately named Mann Act.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeesh.
Chris, the source of all evil in the world?
Facebook.
No, you're wrong. Twitter in this case.
Oh, well.
Either or.
Okay. Yeah, Twitter's the one that almost got me fired.
Yes, not by me.
Nope.
Long story.
The tweet that dare not speak its name.
Can't think why? Because you'll get fired if we mention it again.
That's right.
Larry Carlott used to be a married editor of a men's magazine, Men's Health. Then he became obsessed with Twitter, lost his job, got divorced, alienated loved ones.
Oh.
In a grim addiction memoir for the New York Times Magazine, I read this, the tweetaholic describes tweeting every hour on the hour, day and night. The tragic Twitter junkie could not break free. He only escaped his life-controlling prison of cyber-exhibitionism last month when he quit cold turkey. Cold turkey.
Oh, dear.
See, that's why I don't even get started. Because, you know, I have an addictive personality. all right, Jim, who said America's middle class has been hammered for a generation and we've got a Congress that just doesn't get it and that's what this race is about? That's what people want to talk about. I'm not discovering something new. I'm just giving voice to something that they are living. Who said that?
Yeah, boner. He said that in a tavern.
That was a spectacularly bad guess. Elizabeth Warren, who is firing them up in Massachusetts, drawing huge crowds and fundraising, et cetera, et cetera. And we say, yeah. All right.
Your world, sugar and spice. Mm. It ain't a man's world.
She said, I think she was right that her work formed the intellectual foundation for the Occupy movements, and I think it's true, you know. This is what I'm saying. Particularly, that's why it's important that it live on in candidates like her, because they're clearing these physical cities. Obviously, if you hadn't heard, they cleared Ducati Park last night.
Right.
Oakland.
Yeah.
I don't know, Jim. You were saying, don't we have a right to free speech and a right to assemble?
Yes.
It's
First Amendment.
Yeah.
The right to peaceably assemble to redress grievances.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, by the way, speaking of which, you know, this is this whole, the right wing, meanwhile, says that, you know, Wall Street's doing so badly under Obama. He's so bad for business.
Uh-huh.
Wall Street creators have profited more under Obama than in 8 years under Bush. Wall Street banks experienced years of unprecedented growth under President Bush, at least until the crisis of 2008. But in the 2.5 years since Obama's been in office, the largest Wall Street banks have grown even larger, and profits at banks and trading firms have risen even faster than they did under Bush. Despite this evidence that banks haven't suffered under Obama, Republicans and Wall Street traders and lobbyists attempting to make Wall Street's windfalls even larger, industry analysts told the Post that the Dodd-Frank financial reform law will stabilize the future of the financial industry, even as it has crimped bank profits slightly. I mean,
Wall Street traders. They
we need more Elizabeth Warrens in. We need Dodd-Frank only stronger.
Yep.
That's, you know, because that's the part of the problem is they're still too big to fail,
and
you know.
We need to reinstate Glass-Steagall.
Yes, yes.
Computer says, yeah.
All right, our buddy Ian Millhiser, I was saying this is also an important story that the Supreme Court is going to hear the health care. So we have to depend on Clarence Thomas to recuse himself in what is so clearly a conflict of interest when he's got his wife out here campaigning against the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
Anyway, Ian, he's a legal animus, as you know.
I've heard he's also an analyst.
At Think Progress. He writes, the most powerful line in conservative Judge Lawrence Silberman's decision upholding the Affordable Care Act is his simple recognition that the law's opponents, quote, cannot find real support for their proposed rule in either the text of the Constitution or Supreme Court precedent. Today, the Supreme Court agreed to follow in Silberman's footsteps, considering whether the judiciary can appropriately strike down a landmark health care law, despite the fact there is nothing in the Constitution allowing them to do so. Not that that will get in their way.
No.
The Affordable Care Act, Ian writes, cases are some of the easiest cases to cross the Supreme Court's bench in a generation. It's nothing less than shocking that even a handful of judges have struck the law down. Indeed, it's far worse than shocking. It's downright dangerous. Judges are not like members of Congress. They are unelected. They serve for life. As such, they cannot be checked by fear of a lost election. They can only be checked by their loyalty to our written Constitution. If the federal judiciary has the power to ignore the text of the Constitution to strike down laws they don't like, then there's literally nothing they cannot do. If the Supreme Court defies our written Constitution just once, there's nothing preventing them from doing so over and over again. And that's why elections matter, by the way, if for no other reason than the Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
You know, it's important stuff. Look into it. I'm just saying.
I agree.
Jim, Marie Shriver, she's not going to be in California.
She does not want to be in California, but she's moving out to California.
She does not want to be in California, go figure, with me. She prefers to be single in New York, according to...
She's having her Sex in the City moment.
Yeah.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
I met her once at CNN, and she seemed delightful.
Yeah, she does.
Maria Shriver has no intention of being a single woman in L.A. She's planning to move to Manhattan in the spring, according to Janet Jones.
So she can get some? Who's that there?
Jim, it's not covered here in the story. Okay. It's just that she does not want to be in California.
I just want a full report.
By the way, I stole your Schwarzenegger bit in Austin. Get back in the chopper, Austin. We are airlifting you out of here, taking you to California.
You were a single girl in New York. How did that work out for you?
Yeah, well.
How most things work out for me.
Utter disaster?
Yes.
Yes.
Picking up your dog's poo in Central Park.
That's a lot of poo. It's a lot of poo.
A lot of self-injuries.
Almost lost my eye.
Yeah.
Broke my foot.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Yeah, not very Sex in the City for me.
No.
17 minutes after the hour, Chris Matthews. Next! I'm the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my God, this is so amazing. It's all anybody in my class is talking about.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie.
Don't be a hero.
Sorry.
Oh, come on. You had to do it. It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 21 minutes after the hour. We're always very excited when we get... And this is, by the way, the first book we've ever fought over in the studio. Jim tried to grab it. Yes, I'm like, no, I'm reading it. You'll get it when I'm done. It's Jack Kennedy, Elusive Hero, by our friend Chris Matthews. Hey, Chris, good morning.
Stephanie, thank you.
There's been a physical fight over the book in the studio,
it's
a scuffle.
Best thing I've ever written, and the cover ought to sell it more than anything else.
Yeah, that's a great cover.
It's beautiful.
It is. Well, you know, Chris, you have such passion over everything political, but, you know, I've seen you, obviously, on TV talking about it, and you just, your passion and knowledge about it is just so clear that it, you know, it's almost like you know, you're the best advertisement for this book. I mean, you really are so passionate about him, and talk to us about it, because as you started out for perfectly. What was he like? That's what Jack Kennedy said. The reason
back,
people
like,
read biographies. What was he like?
That's what Jack said himself about it. It's the reason we all do read biographies, to figure out, well, if the guy was in the room with me or the woman, what would it be like? What would it be like to talk to him, to hang around, to go drinking with him, to spend hours with him? So I went back and I had a lot of contacts and connections of like Tip O'Neill and Ben Bradley and Ted Sorensen. I know all these people, Charlie Bartlett, his guy who introduced him to Jackie. But I wanted to go way back to school, so I went back and I got the records of the kids that went to school with him at Choate, the private school, the boarding school. Went back and found out what he was like as a kid. There was really two Jacks. There was the superficial kid that was all this fun. Somebody said he was like Maria in Sound of Music. He made me laugh. And then there was this other deeper, sick kid who was always sick, keeping it secret, basically, and reading all the time and thinking he wasn't going to get through school because he had leukemia. Mm. And that was the Jack that I found fascinating, that deeper Jack.
Well, you say that...
the pictures.
Right. It's not what we would imagine. You say, you know, you expect to visit a golden youth and you find this sick, lonely boy who, you know, was an incessant reader. You know, that's why history made him this sick, lonely boy.
Well, that's what Jackie did in their own soul to try to explain his behavior with women was he was always so lonely. His mother never loved him. She said that in that first interview with Teddy White. You know, she tried to figure him out in a Freudian way, denied a mother's love. He must have gone chasing after women because of that, because I don't think she could figure out any other way of dealing with the guy. I mean, she loved him completely. I'll tell you, I can tell you that. And yet he was unfaithful, and he was this hero to her at the same time. So here she's married to this guy she knows is a hero, who's saving the country from nuclear war, who saved his crew in World War II, who men all look up to, women all want. And she's married to the guy, and she's trying to figure out, why doesn't he love me? Why does he love me completely? What's going on here?
Yeah. Well, is that where you got the title? She called him that elusive, unforgettable man.
That was her. That's what she said in 85 in a letter to Ted Sorensen. And I don't think she could ever figure it out. But yet, I talked to Bunny Mellon, her best friend, and she talked about Jackie knowing everything that was going on. And yet, he was the only guy she was ever interested in her whole life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you use the word hero. And, you know, you talk about, you know, I don't know if people know the details. The skipper who saves his crew after the PT-109 is chopped in half by a Japanese destroyer. We see him carrying his badly burned engineer on his back through 4 miles of Japanese-held water. You know, sometimes heroes overused, but not in this case, right?
Yeah, imagine this. He had 10 crewmen, and 4 of them couldn't swim. And so he made sure that the guys who could swim, the other half of the crew that were surviving after the shipwreck, that they would stay with him on this 8-foot plank that he found in the water and ordered these guys to stick together. And he was watching them, even though he's towing this guy, Pappy McMahon, who's 42 years old and badly burnt on his back, and his badly hurt back, all the way to that island that they found. He's also making sure these guys, the swimmers and the non-swimmers, stuck together, and they all got saved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was watching Bill Maher this weekend, so you got in a spat with Andrew Sullivan about the Cuban missile crisis. That's what I was saying.
He's a Brit who doesn't. He may have an Irish name, but he's a Brit, and he doesn't know what's going on.
Right.
He made this attack on Kennedy as a right winger. Kennedy's greatest accomplishment, as he thought. Yeah. Was getting that nuclear test ban treaty with the Soviet Union.
Right.
All he wanted to do was to avoid a nuclear war on his watch, and he did it. He got us through the Cuban Missile Crisis. Bobby Kennedy, by the way, I should have said this, I didn't think of it. Bobby Kennedy was the guy who counseled to the committee who drafted the censure resolution against McCarthy. Bobby wrote it. This idea that the Kennedys were all in bed with McCarthy, yeah, they were fellow Irishmen, yeah, they liked him personally, but they saw what he had done wrong, and they understood that Roy Cohn and David Shine were bad guys, and they were working for McCarthy, and he did ruthless things with those guys that they'd gotten completely out of hand. The Kennedys understood that.
Yeah,
Kennedy was never a right winger. He ran as a fighting conservative. That's what he ran as when he ran for the House, and he moved over to the center and then a bit to the center left, but he was no right winger.
And he stood up to Curtis LeMay, who wanted to preempt a strike on the Soviet Union. I mean, he was the basis for Buck Turgidson in Dr. Strange.
He wanted first strike, and he wanted to kill all the Soviets, the Russian people, and all the satellite countries in Eastern Europe.
Right,
just kill them all.
And he said we might lose four or five cities.
Civilized.
Yeah.
Right. Well, as you write, Chris, I mean, it was his exquisite restraint in the Cuban Missile Crisis that saved us. I missed Sullivan's point too. Like, how was he a hawk?
I don't know what he's talking about.
He ran as a hawk.
Redolent old right wing thing that he was also, he got completely out of hand there. And by the way, ironically or serendipitously gave me a chance for a 10-minute riff. So.
Yes. Yeah, and you were great.
I heard the bookstore cash registers ringing. but I love you.
Thank
say
you, Andrew.
I say you say we watched JFK as a young politician learning to play hardball. Odd you use that choice of words. And watch.
Yeah, all right. Because I think I captured that word for myself in 1988 when I wrote the book. Look, I think I want to finish on that. Khrushchev said in his memoirs that if he had had one or two missiles left over when we attacked Cuba, if we did, he was going to hit New York. And he said, I wasn't going to kill everybody in New York. May not kill everybody, but I'd kill enough people, and a lot of them, to teach them a lesson what it's like to fight a war on their own territory.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Khrushchev didn't want a war, but he was ready to do it. All Kennedy had to do was hit Cuba with his 43,000 Russians there and start killing Russians. And it would have been over. In fact, he warned Kennedy, you go for Cuba, I'm going for Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would have had to be the first U station.
Mm-hmm.
It was so close. Kids today, in their 20s, who are starting to read the paper, or keep up with news, I should say, whatever, they ought to start thinking about how close it is when you have the right leader and he saves you, and how bad it could be if you have the wrong leader.
Right.
And you have a guy like Bush, who was a different kind of leader, of limited ability, but Bush talked the American people into that war in Iraq. That's frightening use of leadership. I mean, that's what happens when you have another kind of leader.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's important.
My favorite line is, I found a fighting prince never free from pain. Just the personal side of what, you know, who he was and what he was like, as you say. Fascinating stuff. The book is Jack Kennedy, Elusive Hero. Chris, I know you're so busy. Thanks for your time, as always, honey.
Stephanie, I always liked the Millers.
you had a crush.
Your sister came to Holy Cross. Just remember that.
I know.
Listen,
I always have to hear about your lust for my older sisters, Chris Matthews. Just control yourself.
We didn't have any girls up there. What do you mean?
Love you, Chris Matthews. Bye.
Okay, bye.
I got a Chris Matthews left. Hey, we can use that now. Chris, like, keep it.
You guys were talking over it. Yeah.
29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. I want to apologize again for my behavior the other night. I take allergy medicine, and I'm not supposed to drink 14 shots of tequila when I'm on it.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. Dear God, it's like a traffic jam of brilliant guests this morning. We say goodbye to Chris Matthews. We say hello to Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor of The Nation. Good morning, Katrina.
Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I am great. There's so many great books out, so little time. Yours is The Change I Can Believe In, Fighting for Progress in the Age of Obama. What perfect timing, as usual, your book, with, you know, particularly with them having just cleared some of these Occupy Wall Streets, including in New York.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of the kind of paramilitary operation we saw this morning in the dead of night, kind of media blackout, really disturbing. They dumped about 500 books, if not more, from the Occupy Wall Street library. But you know what? As one of the posters down at Occupy Wall Street said, you can't evict an idea whose time has come. And
thank
it's
you.
That those ideas that, you know, are part of what I'm writing about in The Change I Believe In, the idea that democracy begins from below, that we're living in a system hardwired to resist fundamental democratic reforms worked by corporate money and power, and that we need organized movements, we need people in motion, and we need those people finding principled leaders inside the system to counter and overcome the status quo, which is rigged against ordinary people at this time. And that's what, you know, I have felt for many, many years. That's what The Nation magazine, thenation.com, is all about, and it's finding its time in these movements of today.
Well, absolutely, Katrina. That's what I was saying this morning, that, you know, exactly what that sign says is that, you know, this is too big a movement, I think. It's not a physical thing. Whether we were talking about Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts,
that's
and we're
right.
talking about the result. I mean, what happens now? Look at the results in this last election, right? It started in Wisconsin, you know.
So exciting. It started in Wisconsin. Where it's going on, as you know, Stephanie, our own John Nichols is involved with the recall efforts there to recall Governor Scott Walker. But what we saw in Ohio was people power through the ballot box saying enough, enough, and that this Tea Party mania is overreach and is not in sync with the values and principles of majorities of Americans. So we got to keep fighting for that. And I think, you know, Occupy Wall Street is, as you said, it's not just Wall Street. It's about 2,000 encampments across this country from Maine to Alaska, and it's shifted the center of gravity of our public debate and dialogue.
Well, that's right. I mean, as my friend Jim here says, it's Operation Backlash already, you know, at some of the ballot boxes. But I think you're absolutely right. If nothing else, that's the victory, is they've already shifted the conversation in America, right?
That's right. I mean, you know, the book, The Change I Believe In, is based partly in columns I write for the WashingtonPost.com in the belief that you want to reach as many people as you can with your ideas. And I saw that in the Washington Post, you've had a 500% increase in the use of the term income inequality in the last month, which to me is very important because I think the issues that so many millions, in fact, majorities of Americans in survey after survey show, said means, you know, they care about jobs, not deficits, protection of Medicare and Social Security, not gutting them, taxing the richest, fighting income inequality, ending this crazy kind of student indentured servitude to loans. These are issues that are now out there. And one other thing, and you've been all over this, the great radio host you are, for too long in this country in the last couple of years, the media, corporate media, has essentially told us that there's one movement in this country, the Tea Party. Mm-hmm. And we knew otherwise. And I think the value and power of Occupy Wall Street is that it's brought into sharp relief other movements around this country that have been working day in, day out, for example, to fight evictions, right? And, you know, the National People's Action, wonderful group, hasn't got the attention it deserves until now, or the new bottom line. So it's a moment both of hope and of peril, because we can't forget, as we see in Europe, where there are vibrant political protests against this austerity mania, yeah, you still have the raw power controlled by central bankers who are doing far more to bail out lenders than they are to bail out people.
Well, I mean, you know, this is basically how you distill it. You say, in short, the Occupy movement want a system that works for the 99%.
That's right.
I mean, it is a really clear message, I think. And I've got to say, Katrina, I don't know if you're watching, you know, the Republican debates, but really, in all of your years as a pundit, have you ever seen such a pathetic pack?
You know, I'm stretching back in time. Stephanie, I'm having a brain freeze moment. Hey, I can't remember. No, it's not. But, you know, it's not only pathetic, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, when you've got a group up there and they're getting a lot of attention, I mean, you've had basically, what is it now, 10, 12 infomercial debates,
right,
where they're trotting out ideas that are either, you know, pathetic or truly dangerous. And
yeah,
it's a party of extremes, of extremists, and it's also a party just of incompetence.
Well, this
and
is
the fact
what
that Newt Gingrich is rising, Stephanie. I mean, this guy has done so much to corrupt and corrode our politics over these last decades. It's like defining primaries down, you know, that expression, defining deviancy down, man. It's really...
Well, I mean, you know, that's exactly it. Is, you know, as you talk about in your book about, you know, the 1%, I mean, all of these candidates in one way or another, all of their plans are somehow for the 1%. And you're exactly right. The Tea Party, this is what they've wrought. This is, the, you know,
yes,
as you say,
yes,
this is
they
not
hijacked this party.
Yeah, it's a lunatic right-wing fringe. That's all it is. And, did you watch this Herman Cain thing? It's just... It's horrifying.
I know. I mean, but, you know, we also got to keep our eyes, and I write about this in The Change I Believe In. I mean, I think the super committee that is supposed to report, I think it should have been disbanded, or if not, that it should all be about jobs and any trigger of cuts should be tied to job creation. At the same time, we're facing an election, a tough election. I mean, when you talk about these debates, there will be someone who emerges from those debates. And I think we're facing... And this, again, I write about in this whole section on the political reforms this country needs so that we don't have this downsized politics of excluded alternatives, because we are faced again with the fact that the alternative to President Obama in 2012 are these candidates who are untethered to reality and tied to the most extreme corporate interests in this country. So we got to work short term tactically and do long-term strategic politics. And one group I'm really excited about, Stephanie, and I also write about, mm-hmm, is called Progressive Majority. They're recruiting about 2,000 people from movements, activists, to run at the local, state, and national level in 2012 and 2016. And I think if Occupy Wall Street has open space, it's not only for ideas, but it's to move not just your ordinary types, but true progressive people tied to movements into our politics.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's why I think your book is so important, because, you know, as you say, it's possible to forge a politics of conviction, and it takes more than one election and one person.
Yes. Yeah.
And in a way, that's what Obama said. I mean, in the we're the ones we've been waiting for. He always ran on a we. But isn't the we are the 99% part of this
that's
still,
right?
Right?
And, you know, that's right. And we need to fight for that, because as I write, the real fundamental changes in our country have come about when you have movements pushing those in power to make the reforms that may not be their first instinct, but we need to keep pushing. And I think any president, even a pragmatic progressive, I guess I would call President Obama, should keep people as wind at his back, not demobilize them, because they will be the force that can be a countervailing force to the powers of status quo, of corporate money, of lobbyists, who, by the way, is, you know, President Obama's former colleague in the Senate, Senator Dick Durbin, said during the financial reform fights, the banks own this place. They shouldn't own this place. The people should own.
Mm-hmm. I agree with Barney Frank that said, where were you in the midterms when you talked about the Occupy movements? I mean, the fact is we need more Elizabeth Warrens. We need people to get out and vote and give Obama people he can work with to get, you know, a lot of these Occupy goals. We could get that done if we had more true progressives in, right?
But the party, the Democratic Party, needs to move toward those ideas that Occupy has now given so much illumination to. Elizabeth Warren is the classic candidate. We've seen the smears already. She is someone who knows why Wall Street needs to be regulated and needs to be held accountable for the messes it created. But, you know, there's Tammy Baldwin running in Madison, running in Wisconsin. And there's a great woman, and forgive my brain freeze, in a Hawaii. So there are people who I think we all need to know more about, because they can understand and bring these ideas into arenas where they need to be while we fight. You know, at The Nation and in my book, what we're doing is bringing these ideas into play so that they have both, you know, an intellectual and strategic value.
Right. I mean, can I just take a moment to say a Katrina VandenHeuvel brain freeze is like an Einstein moment for Herman Cain or Rick Perry. That's a brain freeze. That's a brain freeze on the left, my friend. Oh, that was so horrifying and embarrassing, Katrina. All right. The book is The Change I Can Believe In, Fighting for Progress in the Age of Obama. Brilliant stuff, as usual, from our friend Katrina VandenHeuvel from The Nation. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Wow.
Love her. Love her. That was embarrassing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Forgetting the name of the person running in Hawaii.
Oh, really. It took her almost a nanosecond to remember it. Okay. We're 4 minutes after the hour. Yes, we will play the Herman Cain crunchy audio goodness one more time.
Yep.
And much more as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Join the party. 1-800-STEPH-12.
Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 49 minutes after the hour. Sexy Liberal off to Buffalo for Mama's hometown show this weekend. Get your tickets going fast over there at Shays. Go to sexyliberal.com. Joe in San Francisco. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. You know, I had a quick comment about the Sandusky situation. I've heard a lot about how Penn State didn't do what it was supposed to do, and I completely agree. But the New York Times did a story, and I wonder if any of you read it on Friday, that pointed out that in 98, CPS, Child Protective Services, was involved. They did get a report that Sandusky was showering with a boy, and they closed that case out. In child welfare, what you do is if you get a referral, they either close it out or they investigate it further and then they open a case. Well, they close it out. And that, to me, is a very interesting point, why did they close it out? And the New York Times actually interviewed the investigator who said, you know, he just didn't think it was sexual assault. He thought it was a, quote, unquote, boundaries issue. So I just think that's the kind of thing that, you know, let's remember that actually CPS knew about this.
Well, you know, Chris, Joe, you're absolutely right. I was, you know, listening to a lot of, you know, the commentary on this. It seems like an awful lot of people fell down on the job with this. You're absolutely right. It wasn't just one person or one. I mean, because this is the long time this is going on, you know?
And it seemed like it was all to save the football team and its reputation.
Well, and then you kind of, you understand why Penn State might have that opinion, but you really don't want CPS to have that perspective, right? And that and just remember that actually the system almost worked. CPS knew about it. But then for whatever reason, they shut that case down. So,
well, you know, Joe, I don't, again, you and I don't know all the details, but I don't get how a janitor can see him giving oral sex to a kid that's 10 and another, in what's his name, McQuarrie, can see him anally raping a 10-year-old. And that, who thinks that's a boundaries issue and not child rape?
Yeah, well, and I don't know. I mean, that's the thing that I wish we knew more about. I mean, when was it determined that it was a boundaries issue? Did he go to his supervisor? I mean, I don't know, but that to me is a part of the story that's just not discussed very much, because I think it's a little technical. It gets into the government organization of child welfare, and it's a lot more interesting to talk about the coach.
Well, Joe, I mean, that's what's, I don't know what you think about what they're doing now, he and his lawyer, but I feel like they should just really stop talking. It's making it worse. I think that's what they're trying to minimize him. And, oh, it's horseplay, and, oh, he's just a big kid. He likes to,
That's when you just need to, need to do a Rick Perry and just stop talking.
Yes. Just drink a big cup of SDFU. There you go. All right.
I could say that, you know, I have done some of those things. I have horsed around with kids. I have showered after workouts. I have hugged them, and I have touched their leg without intent of sexual contact.
Right.
I just think I'm going to bust.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's his lawyer, right, that said he's just a big kid. He likes
to roughhouse.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Who thinks that's appropriate? Anybody? Anybody? Bueller? Okay. It seems like there are so many people involved in this that fell down on the job that it's hard to, All right, let's go to Miss Cindy in Texas. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Cindy.
Hi, I got a little song about Herman Cain. I can't sing. I only sing when I drink 5 shots of tequila, I apologize.
We all.
Here we go.
All right.
Herman the Perman, I'm more than just a flirt. I'm gonna slip my hand right up your skirt.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna force your head right between my legs.
Okay.
If you don't please me here today, no job will come your way.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Oh, she's done now. No further questions. All right, Cindy. That's something. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Too many women swirling around my head.
Yeah. Oh, let's hear it again.
So you agreed with President Obama on Libya or not?
Okay, Libya.
Oh, boy.
Country?
President Obama.
He's the president.
Supported the uprising, correct?
Help
President
me.
Obama called for
help
the
me.
Removal of Gaddafi.
He totally
just
didn't study
sure
for the oral exam.
About the same thing before I say, yes, I agreed. I know I didn't agree.
I'm pretty tired. I think I'll go home now.
I do not agree with the way he handled it for the following reason. No, that's a different one.
Wow.
I got to go back. See.
Barroom doors.
Tumbleweed. Got all this stuff twirling around in my head.
Yeah,
crickets.
Specifically, what are you asking me?
Oh, God.
Oh,
man. No. What are you, who are you, and what are you doing in my room? And what are you specifically asking me about?
Reminds
I'm
me what
tired.
You said to that one right-wing caller. Sounds like someone left a sponge in your brain during surgery.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. That
wow.
was really.
I mean, come on.
Just when you thought nothing was worse than that, Rick Perry.
I've done better than that at 4 hours of sleep.
Woo.
Come on, that's not an excuse.
Yeah. I do this show on zero sleep. At least I don't have the nuclear football. All right. Mary in Rosemead, California, right? Today's show, the best. You have Chris Matthews on now. Oh, Shane will send a montage. I got a hop. I got a ha out of Chris Matthews.
You did.
Yay. Also, so great to hear you three during the first hour of the show. No more funny people on the radio. All again scalded myself with coffee in hour number one because Jim's back.
Yes.
For all 3 hours. Voice Deity Jim Ward.
Voice Deity Jim Ward.
Speaking of my favorite guys, like the I just shot myself guy, this I have another guy. Police say a man shot lawnmower that wouldn't start.
Oh, that seems a little rash.
Mm-hmm.
Counterproductive.
Yeah.
Apparently did not work. 56-year-old Milwaukee man accused of shooting his lawnmower because it wouldn't start. Says he was angry because his lawn boy... Uh-oh, that sounds like something Larry Craig would have.
Or Sandusky.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, no.
Sorry.
No,
too
I'm thinking
soon?
Of the rent boy.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Who is that? Which Republican was that?
Oh, what was his name? I can picture him, but I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
Okay. There are pictures of him actually picking up his luggage.
Yeah. So many Republican gay scandals.
Hired this rent boy.
Okay. He says he was angry because his lawn boy wouldn't start Wednesday morning. He told police, I can do that. It's my lawnmower in my yard, so I can shoot it if I want.
It's a good thing I don't own guns.
He's a teabagger, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
A woman who lives at his house reported the incident. She says he was intoxicated.
Yeah. Huh.
Do you think?
A little.
All right.
Oh, son of a bitch! I just got myself.
Always funny. Always funny.
All right. Let's. Dr. Victor Zuckerman is Sharon Bialik, Herman Cain's, who accused him of sexual harassment. She's a Tea Party Republican.
Yep.
That is her ex-boyfriend.
When she returned, she was upset. She said that something had happened and that Mr. Cain had touched her in an inappropriate manner.
So backing up her story at the press conference yesterday.
He's a lying bitch, too.
Yes, apparently. Oh, and he also pointed out...
I am a pediatrician. I am also a registered Republican.
Uh-oh.
No party or candidate from any organization has contacted me. The public has a right to know this information to help them make an informed decision.
You are right. He talks like someone that frequently tells toddlers to tie their shoes.
He talks like a pediatrician.
Yes, he does. Yes. All right. That's it for us. I'd like to thank Chris LaVoy, Jim Ward, Rebecca Taylor. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.